the beats with just Bowen and Bowie Jane.
Hello, it's Bowie Jane with Jess Bowen for Babes Behind the Beats. Today on the show we have singer-songwriter Noelle Skaggs, who is the co-lead of Fits and the Tantrums and is the founder of Diversify the Stage. She's such a legend. Oh my God, she's done some huge things.
She really has. I mean, we talk about a lot of things with her. Obviously, Diversify the Stage is an amazing initiative that she has started, and we kind of get into that with her and find out more about that and also kind of some fun facts about her, like how she was friends with will.i.am and sang on a Black Eyed Peas song, which is like one of their biggest hits, basically.
And also how that came about, which was really interesting. Like some of the circles she was working with, and they're like, hang on, she was in the room with them all the time. Then they're like, hey, you can sing and you can write. And then all of a sudden she's working with will.i.am.
Yeah, she's doing amazing things. Obviously, Fits in the Tantrums, huge. And they're hitting the road again soon, which I'm so jealous about. I can't wait to go see them. But yeah, we're so excited to have her on the show. But Bowie, I have to, before we get into chatting with Noelle, I just have to say I'm noticing something new about you.
Well, thank you.
Well,
actually, I have one earphone on and one earphone off.
Yep.
Because I don't want to damage my newly pierced ears.
My favorite part about this is that you were texting me about it as if you were like scared to do it.
It was so weird because I was like, I want to have 3-in-1 ear, right?
Yeah.
And I've always wanted this, but I just haven't done it. I've already got one in each ear, so I thought I'd get another 2 put in the other ear. I started texting Jess going, which ear are you meant to get it in? Is it a thing?
That was my favorite text to get because, I was just like, oh my God, it's so cute that she's texting me about, like, getting her ears pierced. And then, 2, it was hilarious that you were like, is there, like, a right or wrong side? And I was like, Bowie, I'm pretty sure that's something that was from the 90s or maybe even early 2000s.
Yeah,
I don't remember.
It used to be like, if you got it on one side, it meant something.
That's only for men. It was, like, for the gay community. I'm pretty sure this was, like, forever ago and has nothing to do.
I'm hanging out with too many gay boys, I think.
Yeah, so, you're just like, wait, is this gonna send the wrong message or not?
They're like, is she a gay boy?
Is she a gay boy?
Oh yeah, and also because when I went to India, if you got the piercing in your nose on one particular side, I can't remember, but one of the sides is right and one is wrong. So for religion, I think.
Oh, okay. See, I'm not familiar with that at all.
Yeah, but, I think yours is in the correct side. I'm not sure.
What, my nose piercing? Yeah. Mine's on the right side. So does it mean that I'm so gay? Because I am.
Yeah.
So I guess hopefully it's on the right side for people to identify that.
So the funny thing was all of a sudden, right, I'm going to go get it done. Called them up. They're like, yep, it's a tattoo shop. They said, yeah, you can come in now. So I go in and it's like LA. So it's a cool tattoo shop. I'm like, I want to get my ears pierced. I last got my ears pierced when I was like 13.
Yeah.
So it's been a while.
Right.
And it was in a shopping center, not a tattoo parlor.
Right. I wouldn't even know where to go right now.
No, and I've never had a tattoo and I will never get a tattoo because I'm scared of needles, despite me now having these new earrings in my ear.
Yeah, yeah. Which, were you scared of getting the needle when you were getting...
Well, I was looking at a guy getting tattooed at the time, so I'm like, don't freak because that guy is getting lots of needles
put
in him.
Yeah, that's like, a tattoo's way worse than getting your ears pierced. But I will say, my nose piercing, because I don't remember getting my ears pierced because I was a baby when I got them done.
Oh.
I think they're closed now because I don't wear earrings. But like, my nose piercing, I went into it all like cocky, like everyone said this isn't going to hurt. So I'm like, just do it. The guy was like, are you ready? Are you ready for this? And I was just like, dude, come on. Like, get it over with. Next thing I know, he does it and I'm crying, like literally bawling. And he's like, you okay? And I was like, yeah.
Like, how old were you?
I got this done 2013, I think, is when I got my nose ring. So
did you feel really cool? Did you tell your parents or did they not care about that?
They don't really care. I remember when I got my tattoo when I was 18, I showed up basically the day after my 18th birthday and was like, look, I got this tattoo done. And they're like, okay. Like,
see, that was the other thing. I was literally sitting in the chair about to get my ears done and I was thinking, Mum's going to kill me for this. And I was like, I don't really know why, but I think she's going to kill me.
Well, you know, she's only a couple thousand miles away. So
sorry, Mum. I'm really sorry, but I'm like, a rock star now.
Sorry, Mum. It's going to be a little while before she sees you to
to rip him out.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait till I get that nose ring, eh?
Yeah, right?
No, honestly, I've always wanted a nose ring. But the other thing is when I had a buzz cut, it's like way too hardcore having all the earrings and the nose. Well, just for me, for my personality. Like it looks like I'm going to whip out a knife at any point.
Because you're like the sweetest person ever. So you were like,
I don't want to be too hardcore.
Like, you felt like you would look a certain way or something and like people would be scared. Yeah, I could see how maybe you would look intimidated. I was intimidated with you with the buzz cut, with just the buzz
cut.
Yeah,
that's the thing. So imagine if I had all these rings coming out of me. So now I'm like, oh, my hair's a bit longer now. No, it's time to rough things up.
Girl, I got the long hair now, and I'm going to get all the piercings and the tattoos. No.
Definitely never getting my nipples done. Absolutely
oh,
not.
Oh, my God. I don't know how people do that.
Oh, dude.
I really don't. It's like so hardcore.
Never.
Good on them. It's your choice, but I don't know. I personally could never do it.
We shouldn't have even mentioned it.
I know. Now I'm like, I feel like I have pain.
Well, we'll get off that topic and we'll get back to our amazing guest that we have, which is Noelle Skaggs. And I can't wait to speak to her.
I can't wait. We're so excited. And so everyone stay tuned because she is coming up next.
Hello, it is Bowie Jane with Jess Boehm for Babes Behind the Beats. And today on the show, we have Noelle Skaggs, singer-songwriter, co-lead singer of Fits and the Tantrums, and founder of Diversify the Stage. Welcome, Noelle.
Hi. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, now you are an absolute legend in the industry. You've been around for quite a while and you've done so many huge projects. You've worked with Black Eyed Peas. Fits and the Tantrums are huge. You're a songwriter for them and a singer. How did you get your start in music? Were you born in Denver or LA?
I was actually born in Denver. I moved to LA when I was about 6 or 7. Maybe like I was just getting ready to turn 7 or something. Yeah, I moved out here with my mother. And I've been kind of like in LA ever since then. That's kind of how it's been for me. I moved to Nashville about 7 years ago, though. So that's been like a really fun, it has a great community there. Obviously, it's a songwriting and music town, so it makes my life a lot easier on the creative front. Yeah, I just like it. I mean, I moved there really to have a life outside of tour. That's what I decided to do.
Yeah, we love Nashville. And there's such a great songwriting scene there. That is great if you're a songwriter, which you are. How would you describe your style of music for people who may not know you?
You know, within the Fits and the Tantrum spectrum, we're definitely alternative pop. We've kind of grown and developed our sound over the years. Our first record was far more Motown, Stax period with the nuances of new wave. And then the second record, which housed some of our first number one songs, was leaning way more into that kind of new wave, a pocket of music, and taking a lot of our anthemic and pop inspiration and folding them into this kind of more indie alternative sound. As we've grown, obviously, the music has shifted and we kind of just put out stuff that we feel, but I always kind of describe it as alternative pop.
When you first started, because you obviously are a fantastic singer, but you've started as a singer, or when did you know you could sing? Like, when did you get into music?
I think I started singing first. I used to listen to my dad's record collection a lot after school, like when I was like in like elementary school and just kind of like learning songs and stuff. And I would always just kind of sing along. And then I started like writing the words down, like all of the songs that I liked, hip hop songs, anything. I had like a journal, or at the time it was called notebooks, 3-ring binders with the single paper. I had like a ton of those like journals and stuff when I was a kid. And I used to just like write down the words to every single one of my favorite songs. I don't know why. I was just like always fascinated by the lyrics and just like how they were delivered on a record and the nuances and the cadences, the tones of people's voices, if they were singers, the way that rappers would sit on top of a track, and just like they all had their own various styles and you could recognize them. I was really fascinated by all of that. And within that, I was trying to maybe find my own voice. Often what happens when you're used to singing so many other people's songs like them, and you're writing so many different styles of music, I think that's really what activates you as a songwriter that could write anything. I can sit on the jazzy kind of soul side. I can sit into the disco funk. I can do the alternative. I think it kind of shaped me as a songwriter and a person that could really appreciate different styles of music and find my place in it.
Was this from a young age you were identifying, oh, people's delivery of a voice? And because I mean, I know some producers I know, they were listening to the production of a song at a very young age, which is not usual.
I was always listening to the words. And it's really funny because I don't think I really knew, you know, when you're a kid, you're kind of just listening to stuff. You're having fun. It is what it is. And then I do the talent shows. That's really how I honestly learned that I could sing. I got the balls to jump on a stage and sing a cappella for a talent show at my school. That was really based upon me figuring out my identity within social settings. I was bullied a lot. Like, I was always on the defense. So that opportunity of me being able to just be whatever I want, on it and people would just watch because they can't boo you or anything like that. They just let you be who you are. And I found that comfort on stage that really followed me. I was figuring my way in the music industry. If I wanted to be an artist, I knew I wanted to be a songwriter and contribute to other artists' creations. For me, it was always about the songwriting and learning more about the back end and how I could support people. When I started being discovered more as a person that could sing and perform, it just kind of all fell into place. Like, I get asked to do things. If it were my friends, I'd be down. Some people, I was too shy. And then just the word of mouth thing really kind of started to happen for me. I took a break in college and I really do not want to chase the Beyonce or anything like that. Let me figure out how I can get into the music industry and figure out my way.
So when you were in high school, were you in bands or were you in the school choir or anything like that? Or were you kind of on your own, like outside of school?
Yeah, it was something I did in my room by myself.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, gotcha. And then in college, like you said, you kind of started realizing this is like...
And doing the talent shows.
Yeah, I did the talent shows up through those experiences from like junior high school through like high school. I wouldn't even be singing with a band. I would literally do a cappella songs. That was it. That was like my performance experience at that point had literally been me on a stage by myself singing for people. You know, it's just kind of crazy because I didn't know a lot of people that played. I wasn't really engaged in the arts, you know, in high school and stuff. Like, my mom had me at piano lessons and voice when she discovered that I could sing in that first talent show. So I did have like support. I was learning things. My mom played piano. Like, I just didn't have any singers in the family. So I wasn't really exposed to music on that level until college when I was studying popular songwriting and music publishing. I was really trying to engage with that side of my brain. And I just loved doing it. That was the fun part for me, was just crafting a song, putting it on tape, learning how to mix it, collaborating with other artists, doing that kind of stuff. I didn't really start doing anything with the band, honestly, until my professor in my popular songwriting course suggested that I should start performing my own stuff.
You did a popular music writing course?
I went to Pasadena City College, so PCC. They are also the home of KPCC radio station. And I went to that school primarily because I was community college for me, just gave me the opportunity to kind of do what I wanted. Just study the arts. I was figuring out my way. I wanted to meet more people. I wanted to tap into my creative passions. I've always been a visual person as well. So I took photography. I was always into like learning language. I loved the way that language was written. So I started studying Arabic for a bit. And like, I don't know, I just had this like period of my life that was about a year or two where I was just really exploring stuff. But music was always a part of it. I had my first internship at Atlantic Records. Yeah, this was like around the time like Kid Rock had just kind of signed over, you know, Warner Music thing, and Missy Elliott and Timbaland were like all over the place. Tori Amos was killing it.
For starters, I didn't know there was a pop music course in Pasadena. That's cool.
Yeah, I don't know if it still exists, but I mean, it was definitely there. A guy named Joey Gallo was the instructor, and he was a songwriter. This New York dude from the Bronx had been in the songwriting game for whatever under a company called Rondor Music at the time. I don't think Rondor is still around. He wanted to teach this course. Yeah, it was in the publicity department. And around that period of time, if you were doing an internship, you weren't doing anything. Like, I was clipping magazines and putting them on paper and then photocopying them for the one sheet. I think if anything came from it, it was me learning how to ride the bus from Pasadena to Beverly Hills. And then me meeting Kid Rock, because he had a meeting with my boss at the time. And he comes out of the office and he's like, who is this? You know, like, he's looking at me and I'm like this young black woman with dreads and boho everything. And he's like, who is this girl? And we just started talking and he's like, well, what do you do? I was like, well, I make music. I'm a singer and I write songs and stuff. And he's like, oh yeah. And you know, he just like invites me to the studio.
Wow.
So that was like my first experience. He invites me to the studio and stuff. It was kind of cool, but HR didn't like it.
So you need these opportunities, right? The little breaks. Did that give you a break?
Yeah, I ended up, I don't know if that song ever did anything, but he asked me to sing on it. And I was like, okay, yeah, sure, I'll do backups. ended up doing group backups for this song. I don't remember what it was. I was just like, listen, this sounds fun. This is not my dream. I want to work with people like you on lyrics and study more and maybe be the next Diane Warren. That was literally what I told him. I was like, you know, like, this is cool. I can sing and stuff like that, but I really want to write.
Hey, Jess, you just got back from a film festival, did you not?
We did, yes. My fiance, Lauren, is a filmmaker, and we just got back from the Lighthouse International Film Festival where her film just screened, and it was amazing, let me tell you. It was the best time. We had such an amazing time. And I just want to say, though, it was great because we also, right before we went, had started watching the masterclass, Jodie Foster's masterclass, actually. You know, she has her masterclass for filmmaking, and as you know, Lauren is a new filmmaker, and she's mostly an actress, and Jodie Foster is also an actress. And so she talks about how does she have either the director hat on or the actress hat on, and how you decipher both of those roles when you have both of those roles in what you're working on, which is exactly what Lauren did for her film, because she was the writer, director, and the lead actress.
See, that's cool. Is it broken into 15 minutes, very small segments with the masterclass? Is it the same with the Jodie Foster one?
Yes, again, broken into these segments so you can watch lessons that are between 10 to 15 minutes in length. And so they fit in easily to, if we're like sitting down just to watch, you know, if we're having breakfast, it's like, let's watch this portion of it right now.
That's so good. That's actually what mom said too. See, she's done a few of the writing courses, not a masterclass. And she's like, the problem is that, you know, it's 3 hours out of your day. And with the time zone, you have to get up early. She said it's perfect with the masterclass ones that she's been doing. They're nice small segments and you can watch them whenever it suits you, which is fantastic.
Exactly. And there's hundreds of video lessons from over 100 plus of today's most brilliant minds. And you can get it anywhere. You can get it anywhere on iOS or Android, your desktop, Apple TV, Amazon Fire TV, and Roku. And you know, what is awesome, Bowie, is that as a Babes Behind the Beats listener, you can get 15% off an annual membership.
Yep.
You just go to masterclass.com/beats. It's masterclass.com/beats for 15% off your annual membership for Masterclass.
And the great thing about the annual membership is you can watch as many different things as you want. So like mum is into the writing, but she's actually wanting to watch a few more, you know, she's just interested in what these big successful people have been doing. So I think it's just great for inspiration.
It really is. It's really great. And you can't beat a good deal. So everyone should jump on that.
Do it. Were you aiming more for the writing? Because obviously you're an amazing singer and that's what you're doing with Fits and the Tantrums, although you're writing as well. Like that's part of the whole.
Yeah, I think the artist thing really started to chase me when I took Joey Gallo, my professor at the time, up on the challenge of looking at doing things with a band and performing the songs live and just seeing if I could find my way in the artistry front, because he saw something in me that I didn't. He showed up to the shows. I think I had my first show at Luna Park at the time. It was a club in LA. It was like a venue, kind of like Viper Room.
Okay.
But it was like one of the nicer venues on Melrose. They still kind of did the same ticketing kind of structure where you had to sell your own tickets and then what you didn't sell, you had to pay for. And, you know, just like a total Ponzi scheme with upcomers. But I sold out my room. You know, I had like the smallest room. I invited all my friends. They all showed up and they bought tickets and stuff. But you know, it wasn't that much money at the time. I had acquired, I'm leaving a big chunk out. At that point in time, I had found a manager who was also an attorney who had seen me perform at a talent show. And yeah, she, and this was before band stuff, she was really engaged with me because my technique for getting music and singing my songs was splicing together hip hop instrumentals and writing over them. And that's how I performed it. So like basically my playback was a cassette tape with the beat that I had strung together, kind of like New York hip hop track, and then performing over them.
You were DJing essentially without knowing.
Basically, without even knowing. Yeah, I did a lot of that in my growth as an artist, performing. Like, I always loved performing. To be quite frank with you, anything solo, I loved doing with DJs. Like, as I became more into myself as an artist and started working with more people, and I found my first band and left that band and kind of started doing things on my own again, like overseas and stuff, I was performing with DJs. I loved DJs.
I can imagine, especially if you're used to doing like solo vocals. Great. Great.
Yeah.
playing over a track, yeah. whatever. Perfect. Did you find that your manager being an attorney was a benefit to maybe negotiating the industry a bit, or was your manager no good?
It's still questionable on what she did or didn't do, to be honest with you. It was, for me, it was kind of great having somebody that could look at something and kind of give me guidance. I wasn't signing a lot of deals at that point. It was really like her getting me in the room with producers, navigating the territory of setting up meetings with labels and all of that stuff. And then she ended up dropping me because she wasn't getting any traction. There was even a point in time where we were meeting with PROs or just publishing companies. I don't know what happened, but BMI and all these, whatever, I don't know who was looking at me at the time, but somebody wanted to strike a deal with me and she, I don't know what happened between it, but she dropped the ball somehow and it didn't happen. And that was kind of like, I think for her, her walk away. But I found out about whatever the issue was being about her like many years later. It wasn't even within the same like time period.
You don't really know what's going on half the time. So it's right. like, especially when you're new to the industry. Well,
I never knew what any of my managers were doing in the beginning. I was just like, I don't know. I'm just calling you my manager and I'm hoping, I'm trusting you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was my own manager and I also didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah, right? So, yeah. Another question I have for you, though. A fun fact is that you sang on Black Eyed Peas' Let's Get It Started.
Oh, yeah.
That yeah. song. How did that come about? Where did that come from?
So when Ella Funk was being written, I had become friends with the Black Eyed Peas through a college friend of mine that I'd met that I started dating. And he was the former member of the At-Band Clan. He was like the original member before Taboo entered. And Taboo was always dancing with them and stuff like that. And I guess like they had a come to Jesus moment. He decided to walk away. Taboo became the member. So anyway, I met the guys through him, this kind of childhood friend of theirs. And we used to always just hang out. Like Will used to drive my car to San Francisco and I would go with them to like every show. So by the time they were ready to like record Ella Funk, he was used to me being in the studio and I would be writing all the time, but I never played him anything. I was so shy because I was in their studio. They had their like DJ producers and like their incredible musicians, Terrence Yoshiaki at the time, who was their drummer, Mike, who was their bass player. And then there was Izzo and Prince and George Pajone, who plays guitar and has been with the band. I used to just be in awe of them. And then all of the artists that were coming through, you know, it was like all of the hip hop artists and communities, you know, that had had, you know, great success and, you know, in their careers coming through and doing songs with Will and all these things. And, you know, so for me, I just felt like I was absorbing what was happening and learning from him. He was kind of my mentor for a while. And when I started playing him stuff, I would just like hit play in the room of recording that I did because I would, you know, I started working with other people kind of on the low. And then I started just playing stuff in the studio. And I remember him walking in one day and one of my songs was playing and he was looking at me and he looked at the computer and he looked at me again. He's like, did you write this? And I said, yeah. He's like, why don't you write with me? You know, and I just kind of had to explain it. I don't want to be like in the way. You know, he was like, dude, close mouth and don't get fed. If you want to do something, like say it. Yeah. Him kind of tapping me in there, you know, it kind of built up my confidence. I started working with more of the producers in the studios more and just kind of being a little bit more vocal about what I saw the direction of the song going, the more collaboration, like I kind of started breaking out of my shell. And then I was getting invited to sing on some of his projects. I did choruses on his solo stuff. And then when they started working on the Ella Funk record, that's just kind of how it happened. You know, we were in the studio kind of just joking around and stuff. And I started hitting these opera notes. And he was like, oh, do more of that. Do more of that. You know, he was like, let's put that on. I love that. I love that. And we put it on the record. And, you know, just so you know, that song went through three different iterations. The first one, completely different from what landed on Let's Get It Started. And Let's Get It Started wasn't the song that was on the album. It was called something else. So it had gone through three different processes because obviously when Fergie joined the band, Fergie needed to do the female parts or at least be showcased more. And that was really because the label wanted that to happen. But I'd gotten a call. They were like, she can't do your parts. I need you to come and relay them down. So I ended up being on both versions of the song, the original one, because Will just wasn't capturing the magic that happened when we first started recording the song. And it makes sense. It happens that way.
That's incredible. I love that. Wow.
They'd obviously got her for the band. Were you not going to join the band, or it wasn't about that? You were popping down vocals and that's where it was going to be.
I mean, I heard things. I was being considered and stuff like that. But I think everything is really about time. They were dealing with a lot with their going between Interscope and getting bought out and trying to save their careers and stuff like that. I think at that point, it was just really business. Like, what's the best for the business? And they did fantastic for themselves. While at the same time, I was finding my own project. Like, I landed into my band, The Rebirth. We started getting some really great traction more on the indie tip, creating our own label and distribution company. By that time, I was already starting to do touring overseas and being exposed to DJ culture there, because those were the folks that were like pushing my band's project. It took one song. We did one song with my band was called The Rebirth at the time, and they discovered me just singing on stage with the same guy that introduced me to the piece. He had a project. They asked me to like sit in on a song and sing in the chorus and stuff. And that's how I met, you know, who became my bandmate, you know, for The Rebirth. But we had written the first song together. He sends it to a DJ named King Britt, who's very popular for his work with Diggable Planets, which was one of my favorite hip hop acts when I was growing up. It's like Ladybug and Junebug and all the bugs. And he ends up putting on this compilation in Japan. And that compilation got to the UK to Giles Peterson, who's like the head of, he's basically like what Jason Bentley is for Morning Becomes Eclectic, but like the tastemaker of BBC Radio. And he started playing the song and it caught fire. This was all happening in tandem with the stuff that was happening with the Peas. And Will was calling me for sessions and I was like, I got rehearsal. I'm sorry. I started turning down stuff. And yeah, my band, I was with them for roughly 8 years before I left. And start focusing, really, really focusing on solo stuff, because it had been like 2 years since I had left my band at that point, just to give you a timeline. And I was just, you know, kind of like I was doing random tours. I was going overseas. I was playing with different artists and stuff and DJs and kind of dabbling back into like solo. So I ended up just doing the rehearsal with them. And we tell the story often, and it's not a lie. We did one rehearsal and we just didn't leave each other. You know, we were consistent, and Fitzo and I just were workaholics. You know what I'm saying? Like, both of us are, you know, he's way more so like a workaholic in the studio than I am. But he's always been like an engineer. He's always just been into like creating music all the time. Like, that's his thing, where I do it and I take breaks, or I write down books of poetry and they become songs. We have like very different ways of doing it. But when we're both in the studio, we can grind it out, come up with cool stuff, come up with trash, come up with something great, come up with something that's like we never want to see the light of day again. We just are like that. I think for me, it really settled in that it was going somewhere after we did South By and finally got a call for somebody to invest in us. That was Danger Bird Records.
Actually, I want to touch on South By Southwest. So A, how did you get the gig? Because some of our listeners would be interested in knowing that. And then what happened when you're there? And then obviously you got some traction after it.
Yeah, well, Fitz had his eyes on management before we had even done the first show. So he invited them, the woman Lisa Newpoff at the time, who was an A&R at Warner. They were friends. And he invited her. She invited her partner, this guy, Brian Klein. And we performed. And it was great. We performed at the hotel cafe and they were there and they stayed with us where they could help. They started kind of booking meetings for Fitz in London. They were looking at labels. People were interested, but they weren't interested. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think like our music was so different at that time. And we were such a different look. A white man, black woman, band of six, dressing in suits and dresses and bob haircuts and like really embracing that retro nostalgia. Yeah. So we didn't have a lot of subscribers on the look of investing in us as a unit. And Fitz was spending through his savings, trying to push it. I basically almost spent through all of my money that I had been making from the pee stuff. And we were just getting to a point where it was like, all right, if the next thing doesn't hit, we're going to have to like reanalyze what what we're doing here. Yeah, we got South By, I think, through Lisa and Brian. I think we had signed with, was it APA agency? They were like our first agents. They secured our first South By, but they were like showcases. Yeah, it was interesting. And my mind may be fuzzy because a lot of that whole period of our time together was nonstop. It felt like it was super nonstop for a band that didn't have like any label support. And then when we got it, it like really helped us. But now we got people that are putting in money and we can afford to get the Sprinter van. And you know what I'm saying? Like there was just like, oh, we're going to get the bus now. We're going to get the first bus as things started growing. Yeah, it took a while to get there. It wasn't as overnight as I guess some people think it was. Yeah, we got the Maroon 5 because of our performance on Morning Becomes Eclectic, which was worked out through our managers at the time. We performed on there and it was really unique to perform on Morning Becomes Eclectic, not having a full length record, because that's usually not what they do. You have to have a full length album. All we had was the EP. We barely had enough songs to go on tour at that point. We were still kind of playing 5 songs and, you know, with the scale of band that we had, that was fine. Like you got 20 minutes of fame and then you were off the stage. So we, Adam Levine happened to be in a tattoo shop that played our record.
Nice.
And he gets on Twitter and he's like, has anybody heard this band Fitz and the Tantrums? They're incredible. And me and Fitz are like, what the hell is going on here? You know, so it was like one of those like, holy shit, you know, Adam Levine's talking about this. This is couldn't be fucking bigger, right? Excuse, I don't know if I can curse on here. I'm sorry. You know, we found out that that's how he discovered us when he did the tour with us and I guess had shown up to one of our residencies around the time before we had gotten the offer. And we had done a residency at the spot called the Satellite Bar, which by the way was funny because I used to frequent that bar when I was not old enough to be there. But yeah, we did like a 4-night showcase and the first night was not so sold out. Second night, almost there. Third night, getting real close. Like it was like third and fourth night sold out basically. And he showed up through, you know, like I think like the third or fourth night and the, just the energy in the room was just insane. And that's how we got the gig.
Wow.
That's massive.
Crazy. And it's all been up and up since then, really.
It's been good. It's so funny to like have as much time as we've had off that I've been able to kind of step back and look at the painting of my life and the experiences that I've had. But certainly the stuff with Fitz has been, we've accomplished some really great things. And it's almost crazy to say like things have happened that I've actually forgotten about that were huge moments for us. Getting our first platinum record or, you know, things like for me, like I don't equate my career based upon awards, but I recognize that for somebody to reach that plateau is every person in the music industry's dream.
Yeah. Definitely.
And I think when you're in the process of it, it's not a priority because you're trying to get to the next spot or the next spot.
Yeah.
So what have you been up to in quarantine then? Because everyone's been pretty busy or they haven't, or they've been on an island. They've just been relaxing. What have you been up to?
I did a couple islands. When I could finally hop on a plane and go somewhere, I hopped into Mexico and stayed there for like 2 weeks at one point. And oh, I moved back to Los Angeles. And throughout the process, I was building what is Diversify the Stage. I started the work on this organization that basically has become a network of industry professionals and community engagement organizations working together to foster more diversity and inclusion in our concerts, touring, and event communities. So I started the work just based upon my 20-year experience of road life, you know, and recognizing that I was often the only woman of color in the room or just very male dominated. When we were looking at the roster of artists that were being booked on the shows, it didn't have a lot of diversity or, you know, just like our back of house technical crews. And we're starting to see more women kind of pop up in these spaces, becoming LDs and stage designers. And it's starting to lift up, but there still is very little diversity as it relates to leadership roles, to our vendor supplier ownership, agents, promoters. There's like a widely recognized view that this is something that has to change. It has to shift with all the things that have been happening in communities of color, you know, George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery and just the loss of life, COVID-19, people really having to experience loss on very different levels. And also the reawakening that has happened, I think has allowed people like myself to kind of look to back up and start reanalyzing our career, how we impact the world, I decided to just kind of move towards building Diversify the Stage with the help of a bunch of folks that have been thinking about this and talking about this for a long time. We've been able to create a college-age series. I partnered up with a bunch of different nonprofit organizations that focused on building up women and youth of color in the music industry through education and just activities, internships, and things like that. And I tapped Music Forward Foundation, who is really tied to Live Nation and Crew Nation. The executive director is a woman named Nurit Smith, but I'd spoken to their executive director of marketing, a woman named Nazanin Fatmian. I was just telling them about what I wanted to do, conversations that I had been having, because at that point I had been having different conversations and bringing people into the orbit of what DTS was going to become 6 months prior to our conversation. So we ended up focusing on education, because the term is if the pool is shallow, if people are talking about how they can't find new candidates, we'll start helping towards building up the next generation of folks that could walk into these spaces and provide the diversity that we're looking for. So we started kind of working on a program, a series, which is now going to be an annual series for Diversify the Stage, where we host masterclass discussions. We'll do like 25 students a year. We're focused on youth of color, but also I'm also considering folks that are below poverty line, homeless youth, foster youth, being very inclusive in that way of thinking about folks that just do not have access. They just cannot afford to do what I did in college, which was do an internship for free and ride the bus from Pasadena to whatever on quarters. I really want to support them with a networking infrastructure, with the community support system, by pairing them with mentors that are also leaders in the industry. And then the apprenticeship program, which really brings in the artist, brings in the ability to gain access to existing programs, trade kind of training. If we're looking at like stagehand and technical careers, creating an infrastructure of learning and exploration, because a lot of us don't even know the vast careers that are available on the, even just on the technical side. When we're thinking about our crews and the folks that contribute to the building of our stages, our design, taking our concepts and putting them on the large screens, the pyro people, the people that rig the lights, like the automated stage companies, the hospitality companies, like all of the things that make our productions go. There are so many career paths and businesses that you can start in the music industry that will pay you for a long time. But now we're in this place where we need to create standard practices for safety for folks, standard practices for diverse hiring, standard practices for utilizing more than just the word of mouth technique that we've been using for decades that has really lessened the opportunity net for folks that may not know that your gig exists. One of my major focuses always has been how we connect the dots to each other, how we connect the dots to these existing programs and offerings for people that are and always have been working towards supporting diverse efforts. Before the DEI councils that the companies have now put in place, and they were in existence way before then, and they weren't getting the looks that they needed. So if there is anything that came out of my career experience and I guess like influence, it's been in that I can bring people to the table. They will take my call and they will activate, or they will be inspired to get involved. And if there's anything that I've used my platform is to bring people to the table and to start working out how we can pull our resources so that it's not just about what X, Y, and Z is doing. It's also about the collective effort towards change, because there needs to be some consistency, I think, in the way that we strategize moving forward so that we can create long-term change where you don't need to have a Diversify the Stage anymore. Because it's actively happening. We can plant these into community college experiences and get what Joey Gallo was able to do for me and tap into a whole new resource pool of industry folks. But also within that, also looking at our existing crews and teams and the support they need, mental health services, healthcare, the way we as artists kind of contribute to that activation, using our voices to say, we no longer want to be a part of productions that only have one demographic demographic of folks that are dominating the stage.
This is such an amazing program that you're running. So how do people find Diversify the Stage? Like, is it through the website, or what would be the best way to contact?
Yeah. You can visit diversifythestage.org, you know, kind of check out what we have been doing. There's website has to be updated. I'm still working on staff and finding funding, as you should. You can get involved in a number of ways. People can become volunteers and help us out with the back end stuff, promoting as ambassadors, researching venues and bringing them into the movement. And you could also wait until the next round of applications if you're interested in joining as a student, you know, cohort. You can, as a professional, join a number of resources for databases to include yourselves in. There's Roadies of Color United. There's neverfamous.com. Never Famous is an employment portal specific to experienced touring professionals, you know, technical careers and things like that, and connecting them with recruiters. So when tour managers are looking to fill vacancies, they can utilize this platform. The same with She Is the Music. If you're looking for female identifying non-binary community members, you can go to She Is the Music. They house a database for tour managers, techs, all over the across the board in concerts if you're looking to diversify your teams.
Wow. I have to say, Noelle, personally, as a gay female in the music industry and has mostly toured a majority of my life with men and predominantly white men, I have to say thank you so much for starting this, because something needs to be done. And what you're doing is absolutely incredible. And just literally from the bottom of my heart, thank you for starting this. I think it's amazing.
Oh, man. Oh, man. And I mean, to have you involved in any way, I'll keep you informed of everything that we're doing. We're working towards creating a standard document that can be embedded into your existing contracts, or your agents can use in your contracting, promoters can use as well, with in tandem with venues and things like that, and just kind of creating that demand for accountability and that demand for us to create more mosaic behind the scenes and on stages. Like when we're looking at our music festivals, how they book the rosters, when we're looking at folks of color and country music that are trying to just break into radio or even get the gig at the local venue, how we're really approaching things. And then also making sure that it can translate overseas. Because when we're going overseas and we have a writer here, but it ain't working in London, how are you going to implement your infrastructure? So it's just really creating a standard practice. We're talking to folks overseas. They've created the Live UK, which is a collective body of 50 associations, unions that are all focused in the concerts industry, and creating like a unified body. And this is something that we're doing here in the US, with focusing on US issues and then bridging that kind of communication there. What's happening overseas? Who's doing what? How are people moving with diversity and inclusion, sustainability? How are we kind of navigating the territory so that when Fits in the Tantrums goes to London and my agent hands you the contract and you're like, what is this? We can't do that. It's not being effective. So we want to make sure that it's effective globally.
Yeah, so good. You're thinking globally and inclusive. Gosh, if everyone did this, it would be a different world.
People want it. I think it's, like I said, with the time that we've had off, I really think that it's allowed people to be considerate of how we want to move forward. I honestly don't ever want to have this conversation again. I know that this is a long play, but now I want it to get to a point where I hop on the call with somebody and there is no resistance. There is no question of, well, who's going to pay for it? There is no question of, I don't really know. Like, yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, people just subscribe to it because it's the right thing to do. Better for your businesses. It's the right thing to do as human beings, to include people, to make them feel safe, to create this universal language, to have it be translated on all levels of our business.
Yeah. All right, Noelle, we are going to surprise you right now. We do this with everyone. At the very end of our chat with you, we do a little quiz. And I'm just going to jump right into it so that you don't get too scared about it. But the question number one is, dogs or cats?
Dogs.
Correct.
100%.
Two dogs in here went woof, woof, woof. That was correct. All right. Second question, whiskey or vodka?
Tequila.
Tequila.
I know. I feel like we have to add another one.
No, because Jess is drinking tequila right now.
Yeah, I am drinking tequila. And I'm like, I always feel bad just giving two options.
I know.
But tequila is your answer.
All right. So that's
I approve of that.
I mean,
that's a hard answer.
We approve of that answer because Jess is
very much approve of the tequila. Third question, beach or snow?
Oh, beach.
Okay. That's what everyone usually says, yes, so that's not surprising at all.
We think that's wrong, but
no one really likes to schlep around in the snow. I mean, come on, unless you are like good at snowboarding and skiing and stuff, there's no reason to be cold.
Actually, and you're from Denver, so you've grown up with like actual snow in your everyday life, whereas we're like, oh, we get the snow. And we
Yeah. We're like, no, we don't want to shovel this and like worry about ice and cold all the time.
Yeah, Jen's from Arizona, and I'm from Australia, so we just don't really have snow.
We choose to go to the snow.
Yeah, we're like, oh, it's cute.
Okay, so this question, do you prefer being the headliner or the opener?
Ooh, I mean, you know, I don't know. I think nowadays I would say headlining because we know everybody's there to see us. Ah. like, and it's just the energy when it's your fan base. But I also like those moments where we're opening for bigger artists that may not know our fan base. We're not really tied into like who has how many fans unless we're fans of that band. And most of us artists are kind of a little bit disconnected from our openers. We're trying to get better about it, but we are, you know? So I like those moments where we impress the person that we're actually opening for. The Bruno Mars or One Republic, and they're like, oh, well, come and sing with us. You know what I'm saying? Like those kinds of things are like super cool to do.
Oh, for sure. That's huge.
Yeah, that's amazing. Okay, last question. What is on your rider?
Oh, man. Anything organic. organic. Berries. Like, I love, we have like blueberries and blackberries. And then coffee. Coffee is like a big thing on the bus.
Very and then good.
Espresso pods. Let me be clear. Espresso pods.
Wait, do you guys have like an espresso?
Yes, we have an espresso machine.
Okay, oh, so Jess then, is just... No, one, Jess. This
no,
is,
I know.
You're I'm not going to get booked with your rider the way it's happening.
Okay, so a lot of... Just to let you know, a lot of guests have said certain things and someone said they would ask for a masseuse. And I was like, yep, cool. Going to put that on now too.
And puppies and white socks and...
Yeah. And now I'm like, espresso pods. That's brilliant because I will now bring my Nespresso one. Tour. I haven't even thought
yeah,
about it.
Yeah, espresso pods. And I should, you know, I should stay with like writers and stuff. That's something that we thought about with this writer that we're creating is having technical and artist writers that you can give to venues that cover, you know, diverse and safety. So it can be embedded in your, you know, your M&Ms and
oh, wow.
All of the things. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, I love it. Oh my God. So good.
All right. Well, Noelle, thank you so much. We have reached the end of our time chatting with you. I wish this could go longer because it's been such a blast. For everyone that's listening, do you want to give us your personal socials and also all the handles for Diversify the Stage so everyone can keep up with what you guys are doing?
Yeah. So for me, it's Noelle Skaggs. Basically, all my handles for Noelle Skaggs is I'm the only person that has that name, but it's Noelle. Last name is like Boz, Scaggs. Diversify the Stage on Facebook and Instagram is Diversify the Stage. On Twitter, it is Diverse Stage. And it's in the tantrums for everything else.
Awesome. Amazing. And we will tag everything, obviously, so it'll hopefully be easy for everyone to find every handle. And thank you so, so much for doing this again. It was so amazing chatting with you. You are amazing. You're awesome.
I appreciate you. Thank you. I can't wait to maybe we reconnect or something, run into each other. That'd be great.
We cross paths on tour at some point, for sure.
Awesome. And I'll keep you abreast of all the things with DTS and see where you guys can help.
Please oh, yeah. Do. We would love to be involved.
We were saying that actually before we even did this interview. We were like, how we want to be involved with DTS in
great
any
concept.
Way, shape, or form. So just let us know how we can
help out
team,
in any way.
Team up for that, for sure.
Absolutely. Sounds good. I'll be in touch.
Thank you so much.